welcome to The Happy Writer. This is a podcast that aims to bring readers more books to enjoy and to help authors find more joy in their writing. I am your host, Marissa Meyer. Thank you for joining me. Just as a quick reminder, we are currently looking for our first official podcast sponsors. If you are interested in advertising here on The Happy Writer podcast, please let us know. You can find contact information at marissameyer.com/podcast. One thing making me happy this week, believe it or not, I unpacked my last box yesterday. Yes, I did. It's true. It seems like every time I've mentioned to anybody that we recently moved into a new house, everyone across the board is like, oh, I moved into a new house 12 years ago and I'm still unpacking boxes, or I've still got boxes in the garage or the attic or wherever. And I was very determined. I did not want that to be me. So I've made a very conscious effort to keep going and not just shove the annoying boxes out of sight, out of mind, into closets and the garage and all of that, knowing that I would definitely just forget about them if we did. And so here we are. What's it been? I don't know, 3.5, 4 months-ish since we moved in. And I am officially unpacked. And yes, if you can't tell from the glee in my voice, I am very proud of this fact. One of these days, I might even finish hanging up all of the artwork. That is the next big thing on the list. I am also so happy to be talking to today's guest. With degrees in biology and creative writing, she currently works as a technical writer, in addition to being the author of the Stormcrow Duology and the Ravenfell series. Her newest novel, This Dark Descent, came out last month. Please welcome Kaylin Josephson.
Hey, Marissa. It's great to be here. And congratulations on your move. That's exciting.
Thank you. It has been exciting. You know, it's been exhausting. It's exciting, but more, it's just been like a lot of work. And so I'm really happy to be to the point where I feel like, okay, maybe I can just like relax and enjoy the house a little bit now.
I know what you mean. And I think it's like especially exacerbated for book people because we all just have like bookshelves full of like 100 pounds worth of things to move and several boxes.
Why are books so heavy? My husband frequently mentioned as we were packing boxes, it's like, how many boxes do you need for your books? And it was a lot. And they're the biggest pain because they are so heavy. But what can you do? You can't get rid of them.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for joining me. Congratulations on this wonderfully fun fantasy novel, which I very much enjoyed. I will tell you, I just got back from a road trip with my girls who are really into horses. Horses are like the thing. And this was one of the audiobooks that we were listening to on our very long drives, and we all really enjoyed it.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool. Thank you so much. The audiobook narrators knocked it out of the park.
They were fantastic. The narrators are really great. Highly recommended. I will say that I was glad that we were done with the road trip for some of the later passages where I was listening to it just by myself and the girls didn't hear that. I'm like, oh, that might have been a little on the dark side for them.
I was gonna ask you how old your kids were.
They are 8. They are 8. And I don't think that they heard any of the parts that I was like, maybe we're going to turn it off now.
Ravenfall might be a better fit for them.
Right. No, definitely. So the first question that I'd love to start with is I'd like to hear your origin story. How did you become a writer? And I know with a degree in biology, working in technical writing, like those things don't seem to pair naturally with creative writing and novel writing. So how did you get here?
So I always feel like, you know, I think it's really common question at author events to be asked, like, you know, when did you want to become a writer? And I feel like I have a really unsatisfying answer to that because like, I don't remember making that decision. It's just something that I have done my entire life as far back as I can remember. My mom claims that she has Scooby-Doo fan fiction that I wrote and illustrated when I was 7. I've yet to see it, but... Did they solve the mystery? Probably not. It was probably just like Scooby-Doo walking around or something. But it wasn't until college when I read Lainey Taylor's Daughter of Smoke and Bone, where I was like, I want to do that. I want to create a world like that. I want to write a book like that. And actually started pursuing not only writing a book, but getting it published. And at the time, I had started my college career as a biology major because I was terrified of doing an English degree and not getting a job. But I loved English.
Very, very real fear for a lot of aspiring writers.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd like to also make money.
I would like to also be able to pay my rent.
Yeah.
Where I attended college, it was a quarter system. So it was very easy to take a lot of classes. And it worked out pretty simply for me to double major. And I was like, well, I love English. I'm going to read anyway. So why don't I just do this too? And, you know, just enjoy it in the meantime. And it wasn't until after college that I discovered the plethora of types of writing jobs. You know, every company, every industry needs somebody who can communicate and write clearly. As I live in the Bay Area, tech was kind of the easiest option available. And I ended up as a technical writer at my current job, where I've been for about 8 years, and then writing on the side, which has been quite a journey.
Do you feel like, I mean, is there any crossover? Does being a tech writer, has it helped you with your novel writing in any way?
It has. You know, basically what I do on a daily basis is I take very like hard to understand technical speak and I turn it into concise, clear, easy to understand English. And so I've noticed that with my creative writing, I've gotten a lot better at being able to look at something and be like, oh, that could be a word instead of a paragraph. Or, you know, that and that say the same thing. They accomplish the same thing. I'm just going to cut this. Somehow I still manage to overwrite everything that I do, but better than it would have been.
Me too. I'm definitely an overwriter. So guilty. Well, I love that. And I am fascinated by one of your initial inspirations being Lainey Taylor, who I love. She's definitely one of my auto-buy authors. But it's like, she's one of those authors where every time I read her work, I feel like I should just give up. Like, I'll never be this good. What do I think I'm doing? So I love that you had the opposite, your reaction. You're like, I can do this.
Well, that was then. Now that I, like, you know, I'm actually like in the weeds of writing books, whenever I read her stuff, I'm just like,
what was I thinking? Oh, she's so good. All right. So here you are, multiple books. I actually didn't go to see. What book is this of yours?
So this was number four.
Number four. Okay. Four books in. Would you please tell listeners, what is This Dark Descent about?
Yes. This Dark Descent is a young adult fantasy that I think would appeal to fans of the morally great characters and found family in Six of Crows and the magical horse racing of Scorpio races. It is a Jewish-inspired fantasy about the eldest daughter of a renowned family who's on the verge of ruin, who joins forces with a mysterious rogue enchanter and a handsome, ambitious heir to win a deadly magical horse race.
All right. So there's so many things that I want to talk about. We'll start with horses, because that was definitely one of the big appeals for me and for my girls. Do you have a history in horses and horse racing, horse riding? Did you have to just like research the heck out of this?
So I did ride horses when I was a kid. So I knew a lot of like language and horse behavior and stuff like that. But I still did a lot of refreshing, especially on the racing aspects, and had a couple friends who I know rode horses read it. But I kind of landed on horse racing because I knew that I was going to write a story with Jewish mythology, and I had landed on golems because I always like to try to do animal magic in my books, and it seemed like a unique opportunity to explore the golem mythology in a new way. And at the time, I was mid-watch of Peaky Blinders, and Thomas Shelby, who I think is a very fascinating character, runs horse races, him and his family. And so it was kind of those two ideas came together. And I'm like, oh, well, if there were golems in this world with, you know, the basically enchanted animals, what would people do? There'd probably be a competition. And then went straight to horse racing.
I love that. And I thought the race element is kind of like a really fun take on the the death competition. There's a word for it, and I'm drawing a blank now. But anyway, the Hunger Games style competition where everyone's trying to accomplish something and like lots of people are probably going to die. And this was such a unique twist on it.
Thank you. Yeah, it was really fun to explore because I've always really liked that trope. I think the Darkest Shade of Magic series does it very well. A Far Wilder Magic is a fantastic example. And it was fun to kind of explore myself and try to put a unique twist on it.
How did you go about coming up with what the different races would look like and what different obstacles Makira, our main character, was going to come in contact with?
Well, initially, the book only had one race, and it occurred at the very end.
Oh, how interesting.
Yes. And then a very nice critique partner of mine was like, hey, nothing happens for the first 2/3 of this book. So, you're right.
I hate that.
And so they suggested, what if the race was broken up into multiple parts and then, you know, it was used more effectively then to advance subplots and character and other parts of the story instead of being, you know, the culmination at the end. And at that point, I already had my magic system, which is reliant on gemstones in order to produce enchantments. And there are 4 different types of gemstones that result in 4 different types of enchantments, which are behavioral, which is like personality stuff, physical, like strength enchantments, energy, which is stuff like lights, and ethereal, which is stuff like enchantments to never get lost. And so when I realized that I was going to break up this race, I already had kind of a natural structure there. And I was like, okay, well, we might as well do 4, and each one will be representative of one type of enchantment. And then within that race, you would see tons of different types of enchantments of that type.
Did you plot out the races? Or are you more of a just like start writing and see what happens?
I kind of, well, at least when I was writing this, I was somewhere in the middle where I would plot out kind of big beats and then write between them, like connecting the dots. Since then, I have become much more of an outliner and kind of wish that I had for this book too. But I actually found the races to be the most difficult part for me to write, because I did want them to accomplish more than just action and more than just the race themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, where I drew a lot of inspiration was from Mario Kart, which is why that same critique partner calls this my Jewish mobster Mario Kart book, which I think is probably the best pitch I have. But basically, I was like, I want the courses themselves to be dangerous, and I want what the writers are capable of doing within those races to be difficult. So I looked for both for ways where the actual race courses would be enchanted and then the items available to people in the races would be enchanted.
Mm. So you've mentioned Jewish mythology and that you drew a lot of inspiration, particularly from golems. And I had like a vague idea of what golems were, but I know very little about Jewish mythology. How much were you drawing inspiration from that? Or was it really just like the golems and then from creating your own thing on top of that?
I drew a lot of inspiration. So my initial kind of motivation for this book was that I wanted to write a Jewish second world fantasy because I wasn't aware of any at the time. The only 2 Jewish fantasies I could name really were Ninth House and Spinning Silver, which were both fantastic, but weren't quite the kind of second world fantasy that I was looking for. So I knew that's what I wanted to do. And golems was the first thing that came to mind, but there is a lot from the book that pulls from Jewish mythology and culture and religion. The Kinnish people in the book are basically an analog for Jewish people. So I did a lot of world building around making that clear. Mm-hmm. However, it is not a one-to-one parallel. For example, in the book, there are the 4 harbingers, which are the gods that brought magic to humanity that the Kinnish people believe in, whereas Judaism is strictly monotheistic. Mm. But in contrast, I did a lot of things where, like, you know, there's a very heavy focus on study in Judaism, and there's a very heavy focus on study in Kinnism in the book. So there are a lot of like cultural and religious parallels. But like I said, it's not directly one-to-one.
Mm-hmm. All right. So you mentioned world building and you've mentioned magic systems, which I love. Do you enjoy the world building aspect? Because for me, it's always like one of the most tricky parts about writing fantasy is trying to create a world that feels different and unique and like a magic system that has, you know, really cool things, but also isn't so cool that you don't have limitations on it. And I don't know, I get so in my head about all of that. Is that a part that you really enjoy about writing?
Yeah, actually, it's my favorite part. Magic is where the magic system, I should say, is where every single one of my books began. Stormcrow came to me for the idea of giant magical crows. Ravenfall is about a family of psychics. And this Dark Descent, I said the first thing that came to mind for me was the golems, and then shortly after the enchantments. And I really enjoy kind of figuring out all the rules. And my favorite part is I always like to have what the characters know about the magic system in the beginning, and then what they learn throughout the process, mm-hmm. throughout the book. And I think that's a little bit of my science side creeping in. I like science-based magic systems. In this Dark Descent, it is basically a chemical reaction where a combination of magic being funneled through a gemstone and a spell results in a different type of enchantment. And because of that, I think my magic systems tend to naturally lend themselves to a development process where like people are researching constantly and discover more about it and new applications. So I tend to start out pretty limited and then grow. And I've yet to run into the scenario where I'm like, oh no, I've just given them unlimited abilities and they can do anything. I try to be very careful about ensuring that I know my rules and I know my limitations. But I'm sure that one day I'm going to back myself into a very deep corner.
It does happen. That's one of the fun challenges of writing is corner and then you gotta figure your way out.
Yep.
I do love that tip of figuring out what your characters know at the beginning and then what they're going to discover over the course of the story. Because it just automatically then gives character growth. It lends itself to character arc, and gives surprises for the readers. Like that's a great little tip.
Yeah. It's definitely one of my favorite parts.
And do you know what they're going to discover, or do you ever surprise yourself? Or I guess it'd be more accurate to ask, does the book surprise you?
I usually know. I think that sometimes my explanations change largely because of plot holes or things where I find where I've contradicted myself. I'm like, oh, that can't actually be the reason why this is true because of this other thing that I said. But usually I know the end goal of what they're going to work towards.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then let's talk about another aspect of world building. There is a ton of political intrigue in this book. In a really, like, not in like a boring, like World War II narrative or anything, but like in a really juicy family dramas and succession battles and betrayal and like a stirring rebellion and all of this. Similarly, is that something that you really do a deep dive into figuring out before you start?
Yeah, I spend a lot of time kind of whiteboarding, and then I transfer all of my ideas to a notebook that I have for each book that will always clearly outline like all of the different political structures and whatnot. At the start of the book, there's actually a little bit of front matter that has a couple of different diagrams that are straight from my journals. That they decided to include because I may have gone a little too far into that and people needed a guide. But that is one of the parts that I actually find the most difficult because I find it the least interesting because I am so just like caught up in the magic of fantasy books. That really is my favorite part. And then the characters and the plot and whatnot. So I find myself having to like really force myself to sit down and figure out political systems and whatnot, mm-hmm. Which is good because they keep featuring in my books, even though I don't love them.
Are you drawing inspiration from history at all?
No, actually, I don't really.
Okay.
I think there is definitely an influence in this Dark Descent, like I said, from Peaky Blinders and kind of that era and time. But I really don't do a lot of direct parallels.
I have never seen this Peaky Blinders. You're making me feel like I should probably watch it.
You have to watch it.
I've heard a lot about it. It definitely has come up a lot.
It is so good.
And then while we're on the topic of like this political intrigue and, you know, all of these families and that element of world building, you've got such cool bonus material in this book. And like having listened to it on audio, I almost missed it. And it wasn't until I was preparing for this interview that I was like flipping through the arc that it was sent to me. And I'm like, oh my gosh, there's a really cool map. Oh my gosh, there's like a family hierarchy mm-hmm. chart. I'm not saying that right, I don't think. And like, there's all this cool stuff. Was that your idea? How did that come about?
The map was actually no I think both yeah all three of those were suggested by my publisher, though I would have asked for the map if they hadn't mm. suggested it, because I just think that every fantasy book should have a map, because it just makes things so much simpler.
I have never had a map, and people who've listened to this podcast since the beginning know that it is one of my biggest envies. someday I want a map.
I feel like, I mean, honestly, so the Stormcrow, I had to ask for it in this Dark Descent. I'm thankful, you know, they brought it up. But I, ever going forward, I'm always going to ask just in case.
Say yes, I guess it doesn't hurt.
Yeah, yeah. But it was really cool, actually, because initially they were just doing the map, and then they suggested the Front Matter 2, which, like you mentioned, has kind of like the royal family and noble houses and tells you who's who, and then also kind of outlines the other power structures, which I just think is a really nice reference when you're learning all these terms when you start a new book.
Mm-hmm. No, and I love, you know, to be able to flip to the beginning. Like if you get lost, you're not sure exactly who is this person, where do they fit into things. And also it's just pretty, like your mm-hmm. designer or illustrator, whoever, I don't know if they're credited in here somewhere, but it's just, they're really pretty pages.
Yeah. It was Virginia Allen is the artist for the map. And she's spectacular. And then Samira Irani was the designer who did pretty much all the interior elements.
I love it. Did you provide like the, I don't know, a sketch or something for them to go off of?
Oh yeah. Really horrible sketch. I learned my lesson after the Stormcrow map, because I provided a really terrible sketch for the Stormcrow map, and then they just used that and they made it really pretty, but I was like, oh no, I didn't realize that like you were just gonna copy that. So for this Dark Descent, I sent it in, and with like very bold letters, it does not have to look like this.
Take this and do as you will.
Yes.
Let's talk characters. We've got two viewpoint characters. We've got Makira, who is the horse rider of the competition, the one who actually is the one doing the racing. And then we've got Ari, or Ariel, who is the one who creates the golem horse that she rides, which is so cool. Did you always know it was going to be from both points of view?
Yeah. When I came up with the initial idea of the horse race, the first question I asked myself was like, okay, well, who would enter this? It's extremely dangerous. If you like horses, your horse is probably going to die. So why would you do this?
Mm.
And that kind of led to the natural creation of a character who has no choice, that is forced to enter. In this case, Makira's father is an unlicensed enchanter, which is illegal and punishable by death. And when the heir to a noble house who has always coveted their enchanted horses discovers that, he uses it against her and basically forces her into this bargain where she has to enter the race without an enchanted horse. And so once I had reached that point, I realized, all right, well, I need a character who's actually going to create this golem horse, because the golem's magic is undetectable. So Makira will be able to ride a, quote, unenchanted horse while still having a chance to actually win. And that's where I ended up with Ariel.
Oh, so one thing that I think is interesting to point out, usually when we see a book with two points of view, authors are constantly alternating back and forth, you know, chapter from one, chapter from the other, chapter from one, chapter from the other. And you didn't stick to that. You know, sometimes we get two or three from Makira and before we switch back, etc. And that might seem like a really like in the weeds writer nerdy craft question, but where did that decision come from?
So when I'm writing multiple point of views, the question I always ask myself is who has the most to lose in this scene? And that's how I decide whose point of view to write it from. So that pretty much is what dictates for me when I switch back and forth. And I think This Dark Descent was a little bit unique in that, as opposed to a story where two characters are doing the same thing or after the same goal, and you're alternating whose perspective you're telling that story from. For example, if they had both been writing in the race, you know, I had two parallel stories running alongside each other that intertwine constantly. Mm-hmm. So I also needed to be able to jump from one to the other and spend as much time as I needed to in each plot line.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any tricks, anything that you used to try to get into each head of each character, or try to summon their voice as you were writing?
Yeah, mainly that, like, the two of them, I think, are writing on very parallel tracks, for, you know, a little bit of pun humor. In that they're both kind of going down a similar journey, in that they're responding to a life where they have been without power for so long, and it has made them afraid and it has made them untrusting. And they are both presented with this opportunity to kind of take control of their lives, and they go about it very different ways. So when I was switching from one character to the other, I was intentionally kind of looking at the same question through different lenses. And I knew that, like, whatever one did, the other would probably do the opposite. And so easy to switch back and forth, because I knew that, like, Makiro was this kind of hot-headed, determined, extremely loyal person who would do anything with people she cared about, and Ari was this very cool, intelligent, very curious, kind of grounded contrast. And so it was pretty easy to switch back and forth because they were just so different.
Mm-hmm. Was there one that you felt like you related to more?
I thought it was gonna be Makira when I first started writing this, because she's kind of that spark of anger that you never quite get to express in life.
Mm-hmm. I love characters like that. Like, I want to live vicariously through you.
Exactly. You're like, oh, that was satisfying. Mm-hmm. But it actually ended up being Ari, because she was kind of my own exploration and reconnection to my Jewish heritage, in that she is a character feels very cut off from her people, from her family, from her culture. And learning more about it and reconnecting with it is a very big part of her storyline. And so I was surprised to find myself, like, very, very invested in her.
Mm-hmm. Way, way, way back in this conversation, you had mentioned morally gray characters. Mm-hmm. And I noted that because, wow, there is definitely some moral grayness happening in this book.
Yeah.
What draws you to morally gray characters?
I just think they're so complex and interesting, because I think it's very easy to say what is right and much harder to enact it, especially when, you know, life and the world and people with power around you are making it pretty difficult. And, you know, I've mentioned a couple times that I was watching Peaky Blinders at the time that I wrote this, and I was fascinated with why I was so interested in Thomas Shelby and why I liked his character when he does so many horrible things. And yet I was so invested in him succeeding.
Mm.
And that's kind of what I tried to draw on when I was writing this book, especially with Damien's character, who's the sponsor that enables Makira to enter the race, and also finds Ari and brings her into the fold. I wanted to look at people doing good things for bad reasons and bad things for good reasons, and what motivates someone to do those things. And I think you kind of see two sides to that coin with Ari and Makira, because Makira is this extremely moral person who is just constantly put in between a rock and a hard place over and over again and asked to make the right choice. But every time she makes the right choice, it only hurts her and her family. So she's constantly being challenged to whether or not she can hold on to these morals, whether or not they're realistic. And then in contrast, Ari is kind of drawn into the darkness and kind of loses herself to this pursuit of power and control, because she's just, her life has been so out of hand for so long, and she's been afraid for so long, that she's just desperate to find some sort of control. And I think it was really interesting to look at like what kind of choices she would make in pursuit of that.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I love morally gray characters as a writer, but also as a reader. And you mentioned like sometimes there's a character that we are just entranced by, even though we question what they're doing. But if you can see the why behind it or what's brought them to this point and what's brought them to making these decisions, and then it just really kind of forces you to think, well, gosh, do I think what they're doing is wrong? What would I do in this situation? And I love all of those questions.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, I'm going to switch topics real quick before we get to our bonus round. So this episode is coming out on October 16th. Do I understand correctly that you have another book coming out the day after on October 17th?
I do, yes.
Holy shnikes! I had no idea when we booked this podcast that you had two books back to back. Tell us, what is that about?
So that book is called Hollowthorn. It is the sequel to my middle grade fantasy Ravenfall, which is this like cozy, spooky, autumnal book about a family of psychics who run a sentient inn at the crossroads of the human world and the other world, and the boy who comes to them for help solving a magical family mystery. It is very rooted in Irish mythology, whereas Hollowthorn, the sequel, is very rooted in Jewish mythology and follows those two main characters as they head off into the other world in order to save the Tree of Life from a demon who is trying to steal its power.
That sounds incredible. I love that you're drawing from different mythologies too.
Yeah, it was really fun to explore and to kind of draw them both together into the sequel. Less fun to publish two books and the paperback edition of another one within 3 weeks.
Yes, so talk to me about that. Like, how are you managing to promote two and I guess kind of three books at once? That is a lot.
It's been a whirlwind. It was kind of funny, you know, when I first realized that both this Dark Descent and Hollowthorn would be coming out in this fall of 23. I was like talking to both publishers and like, all right, we can do this. You know, we'll find a suitable amount of time in between. And then they both put them on the same day.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Publishers.
And it was like the one day that with my day job that I couldn't do. Like I couldn't take time off. Like I was going to be so busy. So I went to them and I was like, can we please move both of these? And can we move them away from each other? But unfortunately, you know, we didn't want to push The Dark Descent into October because October is very dominated by spooky books. Mm. And there were a couple of weeks within September that we couldn't do because of the Jewish high holidays. And so, you know, I didn't want to publish my Jewish book during a time when Jewish people were going to be offline and not even paying attention. So that's how we ended up on the end of September. And then we pushed Hollowthorn, which is a spooky book, into October. And then the paperback for Ravenfall was going to come out September 12th. But then Barnes & Noble actually picked it as their October pick. And so we had to move it to the same day as This Dark Descent.
Wow.
So what I ended up doing was kind of focusing my efforts on This Dark Descent since it was the start of a series. And then kind of like interspersing some Ravenfall stuff. And now that The Dark Descent is out, I have shifted all of my focus to marketing Hollowthorn. Kind of put it on the back burner because it's a sequel, but it also just felt very strange to market like cozy, spooky book with like dark death book.
Yeah. I mean, those things don't like not go together.
True.
So, and you're also holding down a day job. So do you have like a schedule that you're working by or like just nitty gritty? How are you balancing it? How have you balanced it?
Yeah, I do a lot of writing in the morning and at lunch. But I also tend to do most of it after work since I'm already in that like work mode so I just go straight into it. But honestly, I use pretty much all of my PTO from work in order to meet deadlines.
Mm-hmm. Are you also writing at the same time?
What do you mean?
Like, do you have another book under contract that you're trying to get turned in?
Oh, thankfully, no.
Okay.
both of my options are already figured out, already written.
How did you manage that?
Well, so I had stuff that I wrote while on sub with this Dark Descent and Ravenfall. So when it came time to send options, I was like, oh, look, I already have something that we were going to sell if this Dark Descent didn't sell. So thankfully I had stuff in the back burner, but I do have to write the fourth Ravenfall book sometime next year.
You don't sound too concerned. Well, that is very convenient. And another excellent reason that when people are on sub or when you're querying your agent, start writing the next thing. It could pay you back in the future.
Yeah, honestly. And never completely give up on the stuff that doesn't land an agent. Ravenfall was the second book that I queried. And The Stormcrow was the fourth. So The Stormcrow, I signed with an agent. And then later I came back to my agent with Ravenfall. And I was like, hey, I think this is actually a middle grade book. What do you think? And that one worked out.
Oh, wow. So you've like really had this like backlog of work that you've now been able to kind of start pushing through the publishing channel. That sounds very convenient. I like this plan.
I was very relieved.
Oh, I love it. Well, congratulations on both This Dark Descent and Hollowthorn coming out.
Thank you.
Okay. Are you ready for our bonus round?
Yes.
What book makes you happy?
Ooh, what book does make me happy? Oh, I just read a middle grade called The Curse of Eelgrass Bog by Mary Aberling. That was, you know, there's probably going to be a word for this that I don't know and probably should as a writer, but like when something is so like sad and wistful, but also so happy at the same time. So they both make you cry.
Yeah.
That's what that book did. It just, I kind of saw where it was going midway through. And then the process of getting there was just so cathartic and it was so good.
You've talked about this a little, but what are you working on next?
The sequel to This Dark Descent, which should release September of next year. The third Ravenfall book is written and the fourth would be my next thing to draft.
And do you know what that's going to be? Or do you have like plans for them?
Yep. I've got an outline and everything. I've been required by contract to do outlines and I have since been converted.
Lastly, where can people find you?
I'm mostly on Instagram at Kaylin M. Josephson and occasionally on TikTok at Kaylin Josephson. And then I also have a website at KaylinJosephson.com.
Awesome. Kaylin, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. It's been great.
Readers, definitely check out This Dark Descent, which is available now, and Hollowthorn, which will be out tomorrow. Of course, we encourage you to support your local indie bookstore, but if you don't have a local indie, you can check out our affiliate store at bookshop.org/shop/Marissa Meyer. And don't forget to check out our merchandise on Etsy, Instagram, and TeePublic. We've got some great stuff for NaNoWriMo coming up. You can find all the links to that in our Instagram profile. Next week, I will be talking with S.H. Cotugno about their Jekyll and Hyde-inspired graphic novel, The Glass Scientists. If you're enjoying these conversations, please subscribe and follow us on Instagram at Marissa Meyer Author and at Happy Writer Podcast. Until next time, stay inspired, keep writing, and whatever life throws at you today, I hope that now you're feeling a little bit happier.